cliffcentral.com.
That's right. If you've just joined us now, it is a Wednesday morning, cliffcentral.com. We usually have Gord on a Wednesday, but this morning it's me, Simpiwe, and Sia. Here to keep you company. Got a lot to talk about. And we can get to Dr. Rob Daniel a bit later on. He's the chief specialist ophthalmologist at the Sant and Eye Clinic. So all your questions about eyes, about what sort of things happen to you as you age, you know, what the biggest problems are. The one that I'm most terrified of is this macular degeneration. That's something that...
What is that?
That's where your retina actually detaches, isn't it? I think that's the one... I met someone over the weekend at that wedding I was at who's got problems with his cornea, which, you know, there's so many parts of the eye that things can go wrong with. And I just get, I get massively paranoid when I think of things going into my eye, or right? You know, I can't watch those, you know, when people like, In a movie or where they put a needle in someone's eye, that to me is just like, it freaks me out completely. I can see a needle going into an arm or whatever, but not into an eye. But we'll speak to Dr. Rob about all the things that he can tell us about vision, and also whether there's a link between people who've suffered from COVID and their vision. Also, you know, all the things that we should be protecting our eyes from, staring at a phone or a computer for too long. It's not always just the things that you think about that you think, oh, well, that's obvious, but it's screens. We're around these screens the whole time. And I think that that probably is quite bad for our eyes anyway. We'll ask him those questions and you can put your questions to him as well. Let us know. I figured out why...
of Dr. Daniel because of someone we know who actually went to him for help. And I often, you know, you listen to someone offloading and you want to be there and help them out. But when I heard what she had to go through, look, it's great that we have this form of medical assistance, but to have a contraption, you can see this thing coming towards you and pierce your eyeball.
Yeah. Oh. No, that's horrible. That's what I'm thinking about. That stuff is just, that makes me really uncomfortable. Don't know what it is about eyes, but I always think like the eye is just the one thing. Like if you said to me, you know, where would you like to be hit? The one place I know for sure is that I don't want to be hit's the eye. I'm so terrified of losing my vision. And the eye is super sensitive as well, to me anyway. When they do these operations on your eye, they only give you a local anesthetic. It's usually drops in the eye. So it's not, so you're totally conscious and awake. And because they're your eyes, you can obviously see what's going on, which is just freaky, freaky as hell.
And people often complain about how they don't like dentists. I really have no issue going to the dentist. I don't even mind the sound, whatever they're doing. No, but I'm thinking about the sound. If they're working on your eye, what does that sound like? Is it very jelly-like? Is that, does it just have moisture? Is,
oh my God.
How does it, is it a drill going
Don't like this at all. All right, so that's coming up. We can ask all these questions of Dr. Rob Daniel in a little while. There are a few emails I want to get to just now. I figured out why I was, I started sounding like I was throaty just a little bit before we took the break. And I was like, why is my voice like this? Well, it's obviously all the smoke in the air from 420 and from the fire in Cape Town. That's why. I'm very sensitive, Sia. You know, a little bit of extra smoke in the air, and then suddenly I start going. So maybe that's it. You know, people are
I'm not going to agree with that.
People are reminding me of the crazy stuff that we've been through in the last year. Like Justice says, remember when we couldn't buy pies or chickens at Woolworths because of the lockdown? Auxy Head says, remember when they used to close down a whole store if one person got COVID? Remember that? Even an office, they'd shut down a whole office just because one person got COVID. Crazy.
The crazy curfews, even before this, the one that made the most impact for me was just being able to leave your property and that was to go out walking.
Mm-hmm.
That you could only do so before nine, and how
remember that
walking became so important to people.
Again,
and it's all in your mind though, because I remember just how much I wanted to. I just wanted to leave the house. It was this idea that because I'm being told I can't leave the yard, now I definitely want to. It's crazy how that has played out. So that's why, if this is a conspiracy theory, then sign me up.
Oh yes, yeah. I know what you're about to talk about. Go ahead and introduce this. This is pretty wild.
I saw this clip of a guy talk about what power our governments and various governments are trying to exert on us by proposing this idea of a medical passport. So essentially, whether you're vaccinated or not, and what you have and where you're going, it's all part of controlling us. Even explaining it like this, I totally get that I sound crazy, but I listened to this guy and I thought, wait a minute now. I sort of believe what he's saying.
So should we play the video and let people know exactly what you're talking about here? These are these vaccine passports. Just listen to this and see if you agree. Let me play it for you quickly. Hang on. There it is.
It was a UN document. This is common knowledge. And it basically outlined the lockdowns, and they just gave it to each country and allowed each country to tweak it for their own people, to make it more palpable for their people, and to give the impression that it wasn't an international document disseminated to all countries, to make it people think that every country made up their own rules. No. The five levels of lockdown were in there. In a place like Ireland, they went level 1 to 5. In a place like Canada, where we like colors, now we got green to gray. It's still five levels of lockdown. All the five levels are identical. They used Australia as the model for the fifth level of lockdown, where you can't leave your house, you can't go can't literally do anything. And that's what they really want to do here. Well, I heard about the mandatory quarantine hotels, and I knew right away it's a complete violation of our rights. And the only reason they're doing it is because they want to convince you to accept the vaccine passport. I want to stress that everything that they're doing, closing your business, closing your gym, forcing you to wear a mask, all the stuff they're doing is to try to convince you that it's a good idea for you to go along with this idea of a vaccine passport, so they can vaccinate you multiple times a year, every year, and then use that as an excuse to prevent you from travel, work, congregating, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if you think it's a conspiracy theory, they already have it in place in Israel, and they've already made it quite clear that if you don't get vaccinated, you're going to be relegated to small shops and grocery stores, and you're basically shunned from the rest of society. And that's what they want. They want a complete medical tyranny on you. Once you give in to medical tyranny and you do not have bodily autonomy, and they can literally forcibly inject you with whatever they want as a pretense for you to live your life, are you free? Absolutely not. That's the most invasive violation of our rights thus far. And that's why they waited an entire year of demoralizing you and destroying your life and making you as hopeless as possible. So you will not just accept it, you will beg for it. That's what they're doing. They're doing psychological warfare on you to weaken you to the point where you will not only accept defeat, you will accept perpetual defeat for the rest of your life.
Jeez. Wow.
I don't know what to believe anymore.
First of all, who is that guy? He looks like Adam Sandler, so I don't know how to take him seriously. But, you know, there's stuff he's saying there that just it makes me uncomfortable, because it's not like he's saying the aliens landed, or that the moon landing never happened, or that, you know, Bigfoot's coming to get you. This is the conspiracy that, you know, these are the people who murdered JFK, and, you know, this is not wild. It's not wild nonsense. Like
he's proposing. Yeah.
So, I mean, I've been very clear about this from the beginning. Like if they tell me I need to have the vaccine in order to travel, I'll do it. I'm not in any huge hurry to get the vaccine, because I frankly don't think that our government will deliver to everybody anyway before the end of this year. But there are people who need it more than me. Like if you're old or you're vulnerable, you've got comorbidities, blah, 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 then you should get the vaccine first. I'm not rushing to get to the front of that queue. I'm not one of these anti-vaxxers who thinks, you don't need this at all, and stay away, and it's a conspiracy. But this guy, like, he makes me a bit nervous, because what if it is some kind of coordinated thing where now suddenly you can't, right, you can't go somewhere. Suddenly you can't say, I don't want this injection. You know, bodily autonomy is what he called it. And to me, that it does sound pretty plausible, what he's talking about, right?
And it's that last line that's the kicker for me. Are we really free? Because right now, are we really free?
Yeah.
With all of these rules in place? Ordinarily, I would have said, don't trust a guy with a neck tattoo and also Bono-esque glasses.
Yeah, he wears dark glasses the whole way.
If you aren't watching this, if you aren't watching this, that at least sets the scene of who this guy was. But I don't disagree with what he's saying. I don't think he's crazy or all too crazy.
So what does that make you want to do or not do? That's important. Does this mean you're going to stay away from the vaccine? Does it mean that if you had to get a vaccine passport, that you would get a fake one? Because they're going to make fake ones, obviously. You could go to the right guy who's going to know a guy. And
I didn't think about that.
Oh, yeah. Mm. You could get a tame doctor to sign the thing for you. Oh, yeah, you definitely had the vaccine, and then throw the vaccine down the sink, you know?
To me, my takeaway is things aren't as they seem, and they aren't rather as innocent as they seem. I think there's much more at play here than just a virus that came out of nowhere, but rather it's about control and power at this point. Oh, I really am sounding like a crackpot myself now, but it's quite honest. You know, I heard Justin Trudeau a few days ago speaking about how, looking at what is also happening in the UK, exactly what you were mentioning a little earlier, Gareth, that vaccinations are all good and well, but you still have to wear masks and you still have to adhere to social distancing. So essentially, and you essentially saying that vaccines aren't effective. So what is the point of them 100%?
This time last week, Damon and I were having exactly this argument.
Right.
And he wasn't, he was not budging. He was like, no, it is not. It is not going to put people off getting the vaccine if you also tell them they've got to wear a mask and social distance. But it is, because, like, if you say to the average person, take this vaccine and then you are safe, you're 99% safe from this virus, 95% safe, or whatever the figure is, then they'll get the vaccine, because they'll go, okay, well, then I don't have to worry anymore. Then Corona is a thing of the past for me. You tell them that, but you say, but you must also keep wearing a mask, and you must keep socially distancing, and you must sanitize your hands the whole time. You're like, but then it's the same as if I hadn't had the vaccine. To the average person, that's how they think, right? So it's put a lot of people off. I think that Fauci is backtracking on this in America at the moment, because he's been saying, listen, we're still doing the tests. You could get reinfected, a very small chance of being reinfected. In fact, the chance of being reinfected, they say, is about the same as the chance you have of being struck by lightning. So why live your life if something is such an infinitesimal small possibility, an infinitesimally small possibility? Why live your life in perpetual fear? Why live as a slave to this nonsense if you don't have to?
Like, I do also get it from the other side of the scale. I read an article about someone in their middle-aged or towards their 60s depicting, was very emotional on their part, talking about the relief they have had since getting vaccinated. And I understand that. I think for some people who were on edge, who had some comorbidities, who just want to feel safe, that I do get that it's a relief to you, and that's a solution for you somewhat, even though now with different strains you don't know how to feel or you don't know what to make of it. But for everyone else, for most of us, I don't
know. You know, we haven't actually spoken about Corona for a long time on the show. I mean, I think we've tried to stay away from it because it's a little bit boring, but I saw this story on the news the other day. It made me think we've got to talk about this. This is on Sky News, and they were talking about long COVID, meaning, like, there are people who had COVID and now they've got symptoms that are ongoing and they've got problems that they've developed as a result of having COVID. My problem with this is that all the people they interviewed on TV about this are all prime candidates for like having other like mental health problems. Like these are not like people who you they're not stable. They're people who would look for a reason to keep being sick, either hypochondriacs or they've got Munchausen syndrome or any of that stuff. And they need a reason to be sick. It gets them attention. It gives them an excuse to not have to do the things that they've got to do. And I'm telling you that this is, for some people, Corona is just a great excuse to be a loser. Corona has become it's like their thing that makes them interesting and important. You know, someone goes to a party like, I've had Corona. Like, really, is that interesting? To them, it is. They think it's a big deal. And long COVID, do me a favor. I'm pretty sure long COVID is exactly the same thing as hypochondria. That's just my
theory. But if you're one of those people who wants to get vaccinated, go for gold, particularly what the Maldives are doing. They have, according to them, had a very successful vaccine rollout. Mm-hmm. What's the percentage? Let me try and find it. They've vaccinated the majority of their population. Mm-hmm. And so now they're saying they are planning to vaccinate tourists soon as well. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to promote tourism back to the Maldives. They don't have a firm date just yet, but they're looking towards July and August. They're saying, hey, come and visit the Maldives, spend some money here, and actually we can vaccinate you.
You get a free vaccine. Sure.
So, hey, they're testing out, and they've announced a vaccine on arrival scheme that was announced by the tourism minister. There's an article that crunched some of the numbers. If you're in South Africa, you can look at a return flight for about 16,000 rands. Okay. Weigh that out, hey, 16,000 rands flying to the Maldives, I get a holiday and I get vaccinated. Oh, and the Maldives doesn't have a quarantine requirement. So you can get in and you get right into the action.
Okay. I mean, these quarantine hotels just sound, that sounds horrible. Also, I mean, for some of them, it's 2 weeks that you have to be in the quarantine facility. Can't leave the hotel for 2 weeks.
Sometimes just like an average of like 10 days.
Mm. Listen, count me out of travel until everything's back to normal. I'm not interested in traveling until that happens.
Oh, the figure was 60%. The Maldives has vaccinated 60% of their population so far.
Julie says the CDC is now also backtracking on the number of COVID deaths. That is true. What is their end game of having everyone vaccinated, says Bruce? I don't know. I mean, that's what, you know, I'm willing to at least consider some of these conspiracy theories, but it doesn't seem to me like we know what the intention is, which makes it very difficult for me to understand why anyone would be, you know, especially like when people come up with this, Bill Gates is trying to control the world and he wants everybody to be microchipped and, you know, come on. Why? What does he want that for? I'm not sold on that. Eleutheria says, my mother went to the doctor yesterday. The doctor said that they're currently seeing very little COVID. The numbers are way down, and that is being seen in the practice. Level zero now. Exactly. It's time, for heaven's sake. It's getting ridiculous.
So by you mentioning the curfew and why we're still on level one, are you thinking about just truly going back to normal in terms of clubs? I think nightclubs are the only ones who are still banned.
So yeah,
I
don't care about nightclubs being closed or open because I'm not really that interested in going to nightclubs anymore. But I don't like the idea that let's say I go and visit my sister and we're watching movies and it's like 11:30, then suddenly I need to get in the car and go home because the curfew's at 12. I don't see the point of that. Or if I have to wake up very early and go to the gym, or I have to get to a meeting which is on the other side of town, so I leave, you know, really early to I don't know what the curfew is first thing in the morning. Is it 4 or 5 a.m. But it's stupid. We don't need it. I think it's completely unnecessary at this point. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah,
get rid of the curfew. And also, the thing that really bothers me, what John is bringing up here. John says it is unbelievable that the state of disaster is extended and no one bats an eye. That really is scary, because the state of disaster allows the government to short circuit a bunch of procedures, which ordinarily would they'd have to consult with Parliament. It would have to go through a bunch of different decisions before it becomes a law, for example. And there's a state of disaster. The National Coronavirus Command Council can make, they can issue an edict, essentially. They can make a rule and we just have to follow it. So I think it's very dangerous that we are allowing our government to just keep rolling over this state of disaster. It's not good. So I'm with John on that one. Mm-hmm. Rebellious Ruth says, my mother is still locked away in her retirement home. Yesterday was a difficult day. Seriously thinking of making another plan. Yeah. You know what? Maybe she should move in with you, Ruth. I think, if you've been vaccinated or you've already had COVID, you know, maybe she could move in with you. I don't know. I don't want to give anyone advice because then they'll start saying to me, you know, what do you know? You know, you're not qualified. I just know if I had not seen my family during lockdown, I would have gone crazy. Mm-hmm. I would have gone crazy. And there are people who haven't seen anyone. They've like Ruth's mother, been locked in an old age home for a year, year and a month. It's crazy.
And I have no business watching videos like this, but over the weekend I did take advantage of, you know, that YouTube rabbit hole. I got into a YouTube rabbit hole of compilation videos of grandparents seeing their grandkids after a long time. Ugh, look, is it what a 26-year-old guy should be doing on a Saturday night?
That sounds horrible.
No,
see,
I didn't.
What a life you have. This is so depressing. That's what you were watching on Saturday
night?
It was
so sweet.
Oh, my God.
These grandparents were like, oh, no. We don't even recognize our grandkid. And they were crying. And all of these reunions at airports or dinners. I thought, this is sweet.
Here's a story. Basit Sana, who messages us often on the show, says, oh, my soul, I'm currently doing the walk of shame.
Oh.
So Basit Sana stayed over somewhere last night, and she's doing the walk of shame. Man, that is... Can I tell you something? You must always have a change of clothes in your car. Always. And a toothbrush. I don't need it, but I still have it.
No,
you've got to
own it.
You've got to be
prepared. Own it.
All right, let's.
It's one of my favorite things since I don't have much of a social life these days is to know to some people on a Friday night here at the complex. We have like 5 or 6 Ubers line up at the gate, seeing all of the people climb into them. Then on Saturday morning, I monitor everyone looking disheveled, coming back in.
You're the nosy neighbor nobody wants.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, let's talk to Dr. Rob Daniel. I'm very excited to speak to him. He's the chief specialist ophthalmologist at the Santon Eye Clinic. Hey, Dr. Rob, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
It's nice to see you. So I've wanted to have someone who does what you do on the show for the longest time. And you're the guy that we really want to talk to because we've actually got someone who we work with who's been to you recently. And there's so much about the eye that people are interested in. We've come up with questions already before we got you on. And C and I were talking about how it freaks us out when we see like needles going into eyes and things. And the eye is such a sensitive piece of anatomy. I mean, you know, there are people who still it eludes and evades even the most brilliant of evolutionary scientists to explain things like the eye, because it's just an incredible piece of technology. Natural technology, obviously. But how did you get into this before we even get into the eye and the problems around the eye and the things that you want to talk about? How did you get into to being an ophthalmologist?
Well, I started off my career as an anesthetist, and then I did trauma surgery. And then between those two, I saw that ophthalmologist patients loved them. So I decided to change. And then I just locked into it. It's absolutely fascinating. The eye is actually an extension of the brain. So a lot of the tissues in the eye are, if you look embryologically, it actually pockets out from the brain. So that saying that the eye is the window to the soul is actually quite true, because the eye is connected to all three levels of your brain directly, and it is in fact, like I say, part of the brain. So it really is the most sensitive tissue, the most sensitive organ. The tissues in the eye have the most nerve endings of any tissue in the body by a long way. And 80% of the information coming into your brain comes through your eyes. So we visual creatures, and our eyes are easily the most valuable sense we have.
It's amazing. You know, I often think, and it's a game that I play sometimes, you know, when I'm with friends, it's like, if you had to choose, you know, gun to your head, would you rather be blind or deaf? It's a horrible thing to ask people, but it's also, it tells you a little bit about them. Just about everyone would rather go deaf than be blind, because so much of, as you say, the information that we get about the world around us is through our eyes. And there's nothing worse than knowing that your eyesight's fading. And it happens as a natural result of aging. You know, your eyes just, they deteriorate over time. And even people with brilliant 20/20 vision won't have that vision forever. Or are there cases where people have maintained brilliant eyesight well into old age?
So the most common cause of eyesight deterioration with age is cataracts. And it's the most common affliction of humankind. And it's directly correlated with age. But thankfully, it's the most effective treatment we have. So cataracts are imminently fixable. And it's one of the few things in life that are permanent. So when you have a cataract operation that lasts you, I always say, to the pearly gates, you know, for the rest of your life. But so that's by and large the most significant age-related problem and the most common problem. Thankfully, we can fix it.
Just quickly, what is a cataract, and what part of the eye does it affect, and how, what's the treatment?
So a lot of people have a misconception that a cataract is a film growing across the eye, and that's actually not true. That's a pterygium, which is sun damage. What a cataract is behind your pupil, so the colored part of your eye, which dilates and constricts, and the light behind that is a natural lens, and that natural lens is clear when you're born. Mm-hmm. And as you get older, it becomes frosted. So think of the bathroom window pane. Mm-hmm. It doesn't allow the transmission of light. So as you get older, the lens behind the pupil becomes frosted like the bathroom window. That is what a cataract is.
So how do you treat that? How do we clear the lens? How do we make it less opaque?
So we can't make it less opaque, but what we do is we remove the cloudy lens and then we insert an artificial lens. And that's an amazing thing, because any glasses requirements you have, be they for distance, middle or near, we incorporate those requirements into that artificial lens, which typically if you have what we call premium cataract surgery, you will not require glasses afterwards at all, which is really a wonderful thing. And that lens has a minimum 60-year lifespan. Please God, that's not enough, but typically that lasts you for the rest of your life.
That's phenomenal. You're about to tell us what the after cataracts, what the next biggest problem is that most people come to you with.
So certainly in Africa, glaucoma is the next biggest problem, and that's an insidious, painless, symptomless thief of vision, which causes tunnel vision and then eventually blindness. So glaucoma is quite dangerous because you don't know you have it. And about 9% of people in Africa have it, and you must be checked for it. So you need to go for your eye checks. They need to check the nerve at the back of your eye and the pressure of the eye. That's quite dangerous.
Pardon, doctor, what's that percentage?
Nine.
Okay.
See,
it's high. I mean, it's almost 1 in 10 people. So if no one walks through my office without being checked for glaucoma, that, you know, we take it very seriously, because you literally, if you walk in the shopping center and you look at 100 people, 10 of them have glaucoma, or 9 of them, for, you know.
Do we need to be doing things every day to look after our eyes better? You mentioned how, you know, the sun can do some damage to our eyes, and And we work with these screens the whole time. You know, everybody's on their phones or on a laptop, and we've got lights on us all the time. And, you know, there's so much stuff that when we, I suppose 100, 200 years ago, when the sun went down, the only thing you had was like candlelight, which is sort of mottled. It's, you know, it's not a bright light in your eyes. And now we, you know, we have light coming into our eyes virtually all the time. Most people wake up, the first thing they do is they look at their screen. Is that affecting us?
Absolutely. So, oh yeah. The first thing is we're not designed to look close by all day long. So if you look, everyone's working from home now. As we are, we're all sitting looking at a laptop screen. And before, right, we would have been talking across a table, you know, with each other. So this close vision puts a lot of strain on our eyes. So my first a bit of advice is take breaks and look far. And, you know, in the office, you would be having meetings, you'd be going to the water fountain and moving around a little, whereas now at home, you literally have your entire day sat at this close range with the screen. So take breaks and make sure that you adjust the range of your vision. The second thing is that you may, you know, on that point, you may want to get yourself a pair of relaxing glasses, just a small plus addition with a bit of a blue blocker, or what we call an anti-reflex coating, just to take off the harsh light, mm-hmm, and relax the eye a little bit. So when we talk about the harsh light, these screens are all predominantly LEDs, which push out mainly blue light, and right, blue light can be quite harmful to the retina. So it harms you in two ways. One, it's very harsh to the macular pigments,
right,
and that can cause a condition called age-related macular degeneration later on in your sort of post 55, 60 year age group. So it's very important. And equally, when you're outside, protect your eyes with sunglasses. The other thing that the screens do is if you work with them late into the night, the blue light prevents you from producing melatonin for at least 2 hours. So that can delay your sleep patterns. So by and large, you know, the life we lead with all this technology around us all the time is it does affect us in quite a few ways with our eyes. So my suggestion is, if you can't, you need to sort of set up your life that you're not on the screen all day long. Mm-hmm. Maybe get a relaxing lens to relax the focusing mechanism in your eye. Cut off the harshest blue lights during the day. Try and not use screens for 2 hours before you go to sleep. If you can't, then use an orange lens which blocks that light for the last 2 hours before you go to sleep. And then, you know, try and not get sunk into those YouTube rabbit holes just before you try and go to sleep.
Yeah, no, that's especially the depressing ones that Sia gets into, watching old people reunited with their grandchildren. I mean, can you imagine anything worse,
exactly,
for like hours,
yeah,
on a Saturday? So,
exactly.
So, Dr. Rob, there's lots of stuff that I want to ask you about in terms of the medical aspect of this, and what, you know, what happens with people's eyes with macular degeneration, and what makes the eye work, and kind of how the rods and cones work and all that stuff. But before we get into any of that, COVID has come along and it's changed a lot. And there are probably people who haven't been able to go to the ophthalmologist because they've been afraid, or because they've thought that that's not a good place to go if you want to, you know, if you want to catch COVID, for example. But how has it worked in your practice, and what has changed for you in the last year and a bit?
So during lockdown, we literally only saw emergencies. Primarily, most of the work I do is planned and sort of very much we line it up. So it's not emergency work. And if you needed to wait a few months, it would have been safer. Mm-hmm. Once things opened up again, we adjusted and made sure that we follow all the protocols to keep everyone safe. Luckily, I've had the vaccine, so that helps a little bit also. In terms of people coming back, a lot of our folks are in the slightly older age group, so they naturally are nervous of coming. But most of these people require regular checks, and they have problems like we mentioned, glaucoma and age-related macular degeneration. So some of those people had skipped their checkups, and we're sort of in a position now where some of those conditions have been neglected.
Yeah, so it's that's again
one
worse,
of
right?
the costs of COVID, where you know, people haven't been able to come in for their checks, and things have perhaps deteriorated without being checked. So this disease that really has cost society in many sort of secondary and tertiary ways, which we didn't anticipate. But nonetheless, we back at work, and you know, we're catching up with all of those things.
So tell me quickly, because this is this is one of those old wives' tales. But Andre says, do certain vegetables that you could eat help your eyes? I mean, are there certain vitamins? Are there certain substances that help the eyes that we need for our eyes to be healthy?
Good. That's a very good question, Andre. So the old adage of carrots is not quite true, because it's carrots contain contain beta carotene, which is two of the vitamin B molecules joined together. And in fact, the most important vegetables for your eyes are actually not carrots, but in fact, Popeye was more accurate with the spinach.
Okay.
Because the leafy green vegetables, spinach, kale, and broccoli, those contain lutein and zeaxanthin, which are the most important pigments for the back of the eye. And then also the yellow pigments, things like yellow peppers and egg yolks.
Mm.
So we now know that is more important, and those are very, very important. And then thirdly, omega-3. You can't go wrong by taking omega-3. It's good for the surface of the eye. It's good for brain health, which, as I said, is part of the eye. So I would say that oily fish, if not an omega-3 supplement, and then leafy green vegetables combined with some of the orange ones.
So not at all a stupid question. That made a lot of sense then, Andre. Thank you.
Wow. And then we've all discovered that our lives have been a lie.
Yeah, when your mother was telling you carrots every morning, it's like, no, not really. So I know that the visual spectrum for humans is infrared to, well, we can't even see infrared, but just a little bit in from infrared to ultraviolet, right? And between those two posts is where we get to see all the various colors and all the spectrums of light that it is possible for humans to see. Are there any humans who could see beyond that on either side of the scale? Has there ever been evidence that we have the ability to see things outside of the normal human visual spectrum?
No, we have rods and cones, and then the third visual receptor just picks up blue light. So we don't have the genetic capability to make the proteins that read light outside of the visual spectrum. But what is interesting is some people process visual information differently. And this is quite interesting because, say, for example, you can have a cross wiring where people can hear visual information. So when they hear a sound, they will see a color. And sort of a far more common version of this is artists have a very different emotional experience when they look at a picture.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something we incorporate into our work, is if somebody is a visual artist, they interpret the world slightly differently because it's an emotional response as opposed to just pure visual information. So if I'm treating an engineer, I know this is quite, you know, it's a mechanical setup, and it's very mathematical. Whereas an artist their visual perception elicits emotional response within their wiring. So that's incredibly interesting and very important for our work. So we take that into account and make sure that we counsel people how this might change and so on.
Oh, so that's what you mean when you say that you treat them differently? Because I was wondering, like, you don't actually do anything different surgically, but you would just approach the subject differently with an artist than you would for an engineer.
Yes, so take, for example, an interior designer. The colors will be, so if let's say, for example, a 65-year-old interior designer comes in, the cataract has changed that person's color perception. And then we counsel them that after the operation, they're going to perceive the true color, and that may change some of the choices they've previously made. So the most well-known example is the French painter Monet. He, before his cataracts, all his paintings were brown and sort of oranges because the cataract cut out the blue wavelengths. And then after his cataract, he complained that the world was awash with blue. And all his paintings were blues and indigos.
Yeah.
So we counsel people and we inform them that they're going to be now experiencing the full color spectrum, and that may be quite surprised. I've had a couple of little Santon interior designers who had to go back and change their color choice after their surgery. But they're all very happy because it's like the world has had a wash, you know, it's like a washing powder ad because all the colors are bright and true afterwards.
What is the thing that has happened recently that you consider a major breakthrough? Are there things still going on in eye surgery, in the treatment of people who have, you know, vision problems? Are there some new and experimental technologies being utilized that you're particularly excited about? Because a doctor like you has to keep ahead of the curve. You have to make sure that you always know what is available, what you can do for your patients. There might be things that they're discovering that we didn't know before. Are there things like that you could tell us about this morning?
So definitely that's one of the joys of my field. It's because it's so highly technological. We constantly upgrading our technology. So we've entered sort of the fourth industrial revolution. And we now have a Swiss robotic laser which performs cataract surgery for us. What that means is I only do about 25% of the operation. Give it a year or two, you won't need me anymore. And this technology, we basically pre-program everything on a touch screen, and we connect the robot to your eye, and it literally prints out the operation to 1 micron, which is 1/1000th of a millimeter. So it's humanly impossible to be that accurate. So the safety and the visual results are just astounding. And that's an available technology. There's currently 300 of those robots on the planet. And we're very lucky to have one. And it's very exciting to be involved in the forefront and using these new technologies and seeing such dramatic improvement in results and safety.
That is phenomenal. And I mean, you jokingly say that you one day you won't need you, but I mean, a lot of people are very nervous about going to any doctor, and many people are very squeamish about the eye. You obviously do some of these procedures, if not all of them, in the chair, right? You basically just, what do you use? Like anesthetic drops, and then you just do your thing?
No, when we're working on the surface of the eye, so for example, laser vision correction, which is another one of the fields we specialize in, that's literally walk in, walk out. We don't even touch you. You lie down, takes a minute, the laser does its thing, and you walk out. But when we work inside the eye, so the moment we go inside the ball of the eye, that's in theater, which means it has to be sterile. So we do about half Thursday is the whole day I'm in theater, and Friday the whole day I'm doing lasers. So the moment we penetrate the eye itself, you've got to be in a full sterile environment. Having said that, it's an absolutely painless operation with no stitches, and the very next morning you could go for a photo shoot. No one would even know you had an operation because the eye's white and beautiful. So I see Sia holding his face.
Yeah. Oh.
It's the most civilized experience you could ever have.
I don't know why I have this ridiculous assumption that also the eye is like a boiled egg, and one wrong move and it could just pop out. Like, I don't, oh, I don't know why it is so uncomfortable to me, Doctor.
So you know, because of that very specific link to your brain, many people do have that, call it an anxiety, where they don't want anybody to come close to their eyes, and they are very sensitive. And that's because of the value of the sense. Your visual sense is so valuable to you. So we know that, we appreciate that, and we work with that every day. You by no means are unique. A lot of people have that quite understandably.
I'm not unique? Sorry.
No, not in that sense.
Hate to break it to you,
because it's quite human.
Oh.
It's a human reaction. But so what I mean to communicate to you is that we manage that. Most of our tests don't even come close to you. They're all photographs. So by the time you've kind of gone through our system for a few minutes, you quickly relax, because you see that we don't touch your eye, and you're quite harmless. So it's really quite civilized, and then you kind of accommodate what we do.
Is it true that people who have lighter eyes, in other words, not brown eyes, that they are more light sensitive, or is the color of the iris completely unimportant?
No, it is true. And someone like myself with blue eyes, my ancestors were adapted to getting more vitamin D more easily from lower light environments.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I have less pigment in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And my pupils are bigger to adapt to lower light. So when I come to an environment with harsher light, my pupils tend to be bigger, and my eyes are adapted to a low light environment. So people with darker eyes and equally darker skin, the pupil is smaller, and the pigment in the eye protects the eye from the light. So conditions like age-related macular degeneration are far less common in people with some pigment in their skin. There are definite changes. It's all to do with the adaptations we've had over time to accommodate the amount of light that in the environment we live in.
So
wow.
Someone here wants to know, I can't use contact lenses or eye drops, and I battle with the glaucoma test because my eyes are so sensitive. Is that a condition, perhaps?
Well, the first thing is, the most common reason for not being able to wear contact lenses is an ocular allergy. So the surface of the eye is inflamed.
Mm-hmm.
So the first remedy is to get an over-the-counter antihistamine drop, which you can just pop into the pharmacy and they'll sell it to you over the counter. It's perfectly safe. And get going with that. Secondly, don't sleep on feather pillows. We don't like the protein which the feather gives off, because that can irritate the eye. And then when it comes to the glaucoma test, what's happening is typically optometrists use what we call a puff tonometer, so it blows a puff into your eye. And because the eye is already sensitive, they have that protective reflex where they're sort of closing the eye in anticipation, so they can't perform the test properly, and that's primarily because the eye is already sensitized. So a lot of optometrists now have the more modern version of measuring pressure, which it's called an eye care, so it doesn't use a puff and you don't feel it. So look for either an optometrist, you know, who has one of those, and have that test with them. And then over-the-counter antihistamines are very healthy. I tell people, it's a bit like brushing your teeth. You know, we keep our teeth healthy. In Johannesburg and many other places in South Africa, there's a lot of pollution and dust in the air. So using an antihistamine over-the-counter, very safe drop twice a day, morning and evening, while you're on your back, as you wake up, as you go to sleep, it just soothes the eye and protects the eye from long-term damage.
Are most of these eye drops just, what, saline solution? Is that mostly what it is? And not the antihistamine ones, but the ordinary eye drops that you would buy?
So the most common ones you see are lubricants, and they're basically, I call them expensive water. They've got some saline.
No.
And, you know, don't take me the wrong way. See, I mean, They're completely harmless. They've got some salt and they've got some, you know, hyaluronic acid that just lubricates the eye. But if you're suffering with dry eyes and you're putting in the lubricants all day and they're not working, that could indicate that there's something else wrong. So it's not going to harm you, but a lot of the time you will use those drops and not find relief. And so rather get a check and make sure that there's something that could be managed and avoid a long-term problem rather than sort of banging on with the lubricant.
So the white of your eyes, I've noticed some people that their eyes are not very bright white. Some people have all kinds of occlusions, for want of a better word, in there, and some of them are sort of yellow, or some of them are very bloodshot. What is that all about? What's going on there, and can you do something about that?
Okay, so there's a few things. The first thing is that in general medicine, if the sclera or the white part is yellow, we call that jaundice, and typically that person is not feeling well and they would need to see a doctor because it might be a liver problem or something like that. But that's very unusual and quite extreme. The more common ones are either redness or a yellow or brown discoloration. So the redness we call a conjunctivitis, mm-hmm. and that's inflammation of the covering of the eye, which is the conjunctiva. Got lots of blood vessels, very sensitive tissue, and even if you get a speck of dust in your eye, it can become red. Interestingly, COVID is one of the causes of conjunctivitis. So 16% of people who are COVID positive have a conjunctivitis concurrently. But that doesn't mean that if you get a conjunctivitis, you have COVID. So typically it must be combined with those classic symptoms of malaise, fever, and a dry cough. But, that's quite topical at the moment. But most commonly, conjunctivitis is caused by something called an adenovirus, which is, your typical viral conjunctivitis or pink eye that we get typically from children. And, as they go to nursery school and so on. So that's normally short-lived. And then allergic conjunctivitis, you might have touched a surface or a cat or something like that. So that's the red part of the eye. And then longer term, the yellowing and brown discoloration of the surface of the eye is pigmentation, which is secondary to long-term allergy. So if the allergy is not controlled, so like I said, taking a long-term antihistamine is always a good idea if you have allergic conjunctivitis, because that inflammation, which is swelling over a period of time, heals with pigmentation. So the pigment molecules come in and they sit in the conjunctiva, and then the person's white of their eye starts to have a brown discoloration.
Sure.
And sadly, we can't reverse that.
There's nothing you can do.
No, can't do anything. So it's better to prevent it. And then on top of that, if the surface of the eye is inflamed and the sun burns the exposed part of the eye, that it's far more damaging. So again, sunglasses when we're outside are
right.
Very important for everyone.
It's not just to look cool; they actually do a job. We don't have time for all these questions because there are a lot of really interesting questions here. Carl says he had his tear ducts plugged. Carla says he had his retina torn in two places. But here's a good one from Sharon. Sharon says, I have an eye that waters all the time. What is that all about?
So that's a relatively common problem that presents to us. And we need to work out, is it a too much production of tears? So is there something that's causing the tear production to increase? Or is it a reduction in outflow of the tears? So you have two little things which we call puncta, mm-hmm. and they're little tubes that drain the tears into your nose, and then the tears would go down your throat. So that's mm-hmm. why you don't have tears running down your cheek all day long.
Right.
So sometimes those are blocked. And the previous question was, well, I had my tear ducts blocked. So mm-hmm. in a case where there's not enough tear production, we will artificially block the punctum to increase the remaining amount of tear. And equally, if those are blocked and it's causing what we call epiphora, which is tears running down the cheek, then we unblock them. So it's a bit like a tap with the drain and you know, the balance of flow of the water. So we just have to kind of get the input and output balanced, and then
of course you could also stop watching sad movies, Sharon, and that might help as well. So yeah, that's part of it. All right, listen, I mean, Doc, I really could talk to you all day about this stuff. I find it fascinating, and thank you so much for sparing some time for us today. You obviously can you know, you can help many, many people, and you do every day, and I'm sure that you are jam-packed with appointments again now that you're allowed to have everything, you know, including emergencies, thrown into the schedule. You said you spend 2 days a week in the surgery. Do you also sell products like these glasses that you can wear for 2 hours before you go to sleep to help you with sleep? Do you know where we can get these things? Just give us some general info to round it off.
Yes, the glasses you can get at sleepspec.co.za or .com is easier, and you can just order them on the internet and they'll deliver them. So and then we at the St. and I Clinic, which is in the foyer of the Morningside Mediclinic, but the easiest is just to go to stantoniclinic.co.za.
Brilliant.
And all our contact details are there, and we'll have people that will guide you as to what would be appropriate for you.
This Thank has you. Been eye-opening.
Oh, for God's sake.
I know many people
have heard of it. Doc, it's going to be worse. We're gonna let you go before this gets really ugly. So there's Dr. Rob Daniel. Thank you so much for talking to us. And C.S. Sangweni, who's cracking the worst jokes ever known to mankind. All right, everybody. We will see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock. We'll see. Did you hear that? We'll see you tomorrow. Excellent.
You got it.
Oh, Karen, it's an eye for an eye this morning. See ya.
Oh, for God's sake. Bye-bye. Thank you. Thanks, Doc.
Okay, thank you. Right, bye. CliffCentral.com